Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 26th, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur Public Schools, New School Chief Job Homecoming. Nicole Nash Moody takes over as superintendent on July 1st, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools' new superintendent considers her move to Decatur to be a homecoming. Nicole Nash Moody, who will begin work on July 1st after a unanimous vote by the board to approve her hiring on Tuesday, has deep roots in Decatur. Her great-grandparents fled the race riots in East St. Louis in the early part of the 20th century and settled in Decatur because they heard there were plenty of jobs here. Her grandmother was born and raised here before moving to Springfield later in life, which is Moody's hometown, and she still has a lot of relatives who live in Decatur. I'm a family person, Moody said. I didn't want to move somewhere where I didn't know anyone. Work is work, but I have small children, and I want them to grow up around their family. And Decatur's not that far from Springfield, so I also have the opportunity to see that family. She told the school board at Tuesday's meeting that the Moody Bunch, which includes her husband, Jackson, and six children, twins in elementary school, two in middle school, and two in high school, look forward to moving to Decatur. She said that she will approach her work not only as a superintendent, but as a mom with kids in the schools. My heart beat every time I heard one of your responses, and I appreciate your full support, she said to the board after the vote was taken. From the first moment we met each other, when we sat down, I felt a connection of heart and mind for education. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the conversations we've had about the great things that are already happening in Decatur and the work that we have to do. And I was listening to some of that tonight. This is public education. It's hard work, but it's worthy work for our children and our families. She will succeed Superintendent Rochelle Clark, who will retire at the end of June. Moody told Clark that she hopes the two of them will work closely together during the transition, and that she intends to keep Clark's cell phone number so they can stay in touch even after she assumes the role on July 1st. We have work to do, she said. We have work to do, and we will do it together. Moody will be paid $237,500 per year. A typographical error in the contract shows her salary as $225,000. One of the things that appealed to the board about Moody, said President Bill Clevenger, is her stability. One thing that really stood out to us is that Dr. Moody has stayed and grown in the district she has served. He said at an event Tuesday to introduce her to the community. She's committed, and that kind of stability matters to Decatur. She doesn't move around from job to job. She builds. She stays. She sees the work through. She's invested long-term in the community she serves. That really resonated with the Decatur School Board. Moody is currently Assistant Superintendent of Teaching, Learning, and School Culture at Springfield Public Schools. She holds a doctorate in education from Illinois State University and a Chief School Business Official endorsement. She has a postmaster's certificate and a master's degree in educational leadership from the University of Illinois Springfield and a bachelor's in education from Illinois State University, and has completed advanced superintendent training through the Illinois Association of School Administrators, the Large Unit District Association, and the National Alliance of Black School Educators. She will visit Decatur periodically this spring to participate in the Roadmap 2030 process to create a new strategic plan for the district, which will be unveiled in May. After the academic plan is complete, the committee will tackle the facilities plan to determine the most efficient use of district buildings, and the goal is to implement both plans in the 2026-27 school year. The board will seek to hire an architectural firm shortly to help with that. With major changes in leadership at the school district, a new superintendent, a new chief operational officer this summer after Michael Curry moves to Peoria, plus a new city manager, Melissa Hahn, this year could be a chance to reset a lot of things in Decatur. "I think we're at a point where we need a fresh start," said Sam Mills, president of the Decatur Education Association. "There's only positives in this, and I'm really hopeful this can be the beginning for a new story for Decatur Public Schools." A new demographic report presented to the school board last month showed a steady decline in population, which leads to a decline in enrollment. And the demographer, Preston Smith, urged the board to work closely with city officials to find ways to address that. More jobs bring more people, and they bring their children to the schools. "It's a very big deal getting a new superintendent," said Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. "It's a very exciting day for Decatur. We love Dr. Clark, but we have some new leadership coming in. We have a brand new city manager. We have a new school superintendent. So I see great days ahead." Moore Wolf said she and Hahn and the school superintendent have regularly scheduled meetings and already work closely together on common interests. "It's not always headline material," she said, "but it gives them a chance to share resources and work on problems together." Macon Piatt Regional Office of Education Superintendent Jill Reedy said the regional office works regularly with all 11 superintendents who are in the region, and they have monthly meetings. "We have a strong support network," she said. "We are really excited to welcome Moody into this and support her in any way we can." Moody was accompanied to both the news conference and the school board meeting with several members of her family, both Decatur and Springfield relatives. Her aunt, Kay Robinson, who lives in Springfield, called it bittersweet that Moody is moving to Decatur because she'll miss her and has enjoyed having her in the same community. While cousin Bianco Brown, who lives in Decatur, is pleased she'll be here. "I'm excited that she got the position," Robinson said. "But on the flip side, that's my niece. I'll have to get used to her coming to Springfield from Decatur now." Brown said Moody's mother would have been so proud of her fulfilling her dreams. "I've seen Nicole from the time she was born up until now," Brown said. "I'm glad for her. She's put in the work. She's been dedicated to her craft, what she went to school for, and she will do very well." Moody's pastor, the Reverend T. Ray McJunkins, also attended both events to show his support. "A pastor is like family," he said. "I came to Springfield 24 years ago, and Nicole's mom was my administrative assistant. Down through the years, her mom just knew Nicole was going to be superintendent somewhere. She just didn't know where. So I would be remiss if I had not been here." Mattoon, Event Spotlights Congressional Candidates by Rob Stroud. Mattoon. There's a full field of Democrat and Republican candidates for the 15th Congressional District as the March 17th primary election nears. Several of those candidates introduced themselves and their positions to Mattoon area community members in person during a forum Tuesday evening at Burgess Osborne Memorial Auditorium as they fielded questions about infrastructure improvements, health care, and other issues. Those in attendance were Democrats Paul Davis, Kyle Nudo, Randy Raley, and Jennifer Todd, and Republican Ryan DeBruge. Not present were incumbent U.S. Representative Mary Miller, who was attending the State of the Union address, and challenger Judy Bowlby, both Republicans. Forum co-organizer Amanda Grant of Humboldt said she and a couple of her friends in the community presented this event without affiliation to any organizations to provide voters with an opportunity to hear directly from the candidates for the 15th Congressional District. "The candidates brought great information to the table, and they all have a lot of passion," Grant said afterward, adding that the forum video will soon be posted on YouTube. Grant noted that the forum was scheduled before the organizers knew that Tuesday would be the date of the State of the Union address, where Miller would be in attendance. She said they did not receive a response from Miller's office to the forum invitation. The 15th is a sprawling district that covers most of the rural areas and small towns of central Illinois, stretching from the Missouri and Iowa borders all the way to the Indiana state line. Forum attendees submitted a variety of questions of general district-wide interest, plus a localized question about how the candidates would help with the ongoing algae problems at Lake Mattoon and Lake Paradise. A toxic algae bloom prompted a no-drink order for part of last summer. Davis, a veterinarian from Collinsville, said his passion for fishing and his volunteer service as a bass club vice president has led him to becoming familiar with many area lakes. He said Illinois is full of shallow lakes that are vulnerable to runoff from surrounding farmland. Ag runoff is a big problem. We need to address that, Davis said, while also voicing a feeling shared by the other candidates that Representative Miller has not actively sought enough federal funding for local infrastructure. We certainly need those federal funds back for water treatment plants for all of us. Miller, a Hinsborough resident who is part of a farming family, said last month in a federal funding application announcement that she secured $24 million for central Illinois infrastructure projects during the last funding cycle. Via an earlier news release, Miller said the funding she has secured included money for the EJ Water Cooperative's Delbert Mundt Water Treatment Plant expansion in Shelby County. I was proud to secure these investments for rural Illinois, and I will continue fighting to ensure that our families, farmers, and veterans receive the resources and support they deserve, Miller said in this release. Regarding other uses of federal funding, the candidates were asked if they support expanding Medicaid and Medicare. Todd, a nurse from Glen Carbon, said the U.S. needs a single-payer healthcare system, a sentiment also voiced by the other Democrat candidates. She said Medicaid and Medicare are a good start, but there are fixes that need to be made to these programs, such as more transparency on costs. Right now, when you pay with Medicare, how much it costs depends on what region of the United States you are in, Todd said. It costs one price in New York and another price in Illinois for the same exact procedure. And that needs to change. The candidates also fielded questions about how they would help improve mental health care and reduce the number of teen suicides. Raleigh, a Highland resident who is a former farmer and union steward, said the 15th district is fairly rural and has a lot of isolated communities. He suggested offering an incentive program for new psychiatrists to work in these communities for a set duration to get college debt relief. Let's put these people in mobile units around the district. I'm thinking two or three, where you can get to isolated kids and get to people who need help, Raleigh said. I think we can really serve the district, and I think we can save some lives. Another question asked the candidates how they would balance calls for more data center locations to support economic development with competing calls to preserve farmland. Kyle Nudo, an Alton resident who was a small business owner and union member, said he feels there is no upside to data centers, especially the massive ones dealing with artificial intelligence. He said data centers will potentially gobble up the landscape while AI does this to blue and white collar jobs. That is why the techno barons are shoving this so fast. These hucksters want to get past the point of no return. And then what will we do? Well, we will be at their hands, Nudo said. I don't think anything than a moratorium for data centers is sensible at this point. The candidates were also asked about how they would hold the U.S. Department of Homeland Security accountable. Ryan Tabruch, a Springfield resident whose background includes being a business owner and correctional officer, said he does want to focus on securing the border and getting out undocumented immigrants who are criminals. I also want to give us a good mechanism to keep the people here who are here legally and their families, DeBruge said, adding that he also supports student visas as a way to help those future graduates eventually create more businesses and jobs in the U.S. District Eyes Staff Turnover by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools Human Resources Department seeks to discover ways to support and retain staff. The school board heard a presentation at its meeting on Tuesday from Human Resources Director Monica Wilkes, who conducted exit interviews with staff who left from January 2025 through last month. Responses came from those who left voluntarily and who were dismissed. The purpose, she said, was to see if there were common denominators in employees' reasons for leaving and if those factors were within the district's control. You can't change what you don't know and don't acknowledge, she said. Not all the reasons were within district control, she found. The top drivers for people who choose to leave was personal and family obligations, but the second most common reason was working conditions and a feeling that there was lack of support. Later in the exit interviews, she said, she asked for specific things that would improve support, and the answers were things like autonomy, action when a problem is mentioned, work-life balance, and recognizing success. For most separations, it was not an impulse decision, she said. The decision was made over 3 to 6 months. Early and mid-career departures were most common, with 80% of departures within the first 10 years of service. Those leaving reported a high dissatisfaction with district-level leadership support, with many citing working conditions, administrative support, training, and behavior and classroom challenges as factors. Studying and analyzing the responses to the surveys will help pinpoint places where the district can improve employees' work lives, she said. Wilkes said she also plans to do stay interviews, asking long-term employees what keeps them in the district so that administration can create a retention plan to keep employees. Analysis. Speech partisan, patriotic sales job. Trump calls Dems crazy and claims cheating rampant in U.S. elections. By Stephen Sloan and Steve Peoples, Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump started in sales mode using his State of the Union address to deliver an upbeat vision of the U.S. economy. But that portrayal collides with the sentiment of Americans who remain anxious about their finances and feel they haven't benefited from Trump's policies. He took the high road to honor the gold medal-winning U.S. men's Olympic hockey team and a war hero before pivoting abruptly to a darker tone as he ridiculed Democrats. Here are some takeaways from the speech. Trump's roaring economy. Much of the nation is worried about the direction of the economy, but Trump says the good times are here, insistently repeating that rising costs are no longer a problem. The roaring economy is roaring like never before, he said. He cheered the lower cost of gasoline, mortgage rates, prescription drug prices, and the rising stock market. Millions and millions of Americans are all gaining. Such optimism, as so many Americans are feeling economic strains, risks painting Trump as out of touch. Just 39% of U.S. adults approved of Trump's handling of the economy in February, according to AP NORC polling. Still, the president focused much of the first hour of his speech on the economy, something Republicans had urged him to do as they head into the midterm elections. Trump and patriotism. For a president who always seems to be spoiling for a fight, Trump also tried to summon Americans' innate patriotic impulses. In addition to the hockey team, he singled out war heroes and those who had taken brave stands in other countries, using the moment to bestow numerous presidential medals in an effort to give the address a more positive gloss. It underscored the president's media savvy and understanding that even if a moment isn't appreciated completely in real time, it can have an afterlife in the days following the speech, especially on social media. In one revealing moment, Trump lamented why he couldn't give himself a congressional medal. Taking aim at Democrats. Tributes to the Olympic hockey team and a World War II veteran didn't unify the room for long. The Republican president soon took aim at Democrats and blamed them for many of the nation's ills. Trump said rising health care premiums are caused by you, suggested Democrats are not protecting Social Security, and blamed them for the nation's affordability crunch. You caused that problem. You caused that problem, Trump said, as he glared at the Democratic side of the room. He seemed to get angrier as the speech progressed. These people are crazy. I'm telling you, they're crazy, he said. Democrats are destroying this country. High Court's unfortunate ruling. By Trump's standards, he held his tongue when it came to the Supreme Court. After the court struck down his tariff policy last week, Trump said the justices who voted against one of his signature issues were an embarrassment to their families. By Tuesday, he simply called the ruling unfortunate. Trump sought to treat the ruling with indifference, insisting that tariff revenues were saving the U.S., ignoring the fact that the levies haven't made a significant dent in government debt. He said the tariffs were paid by foreign countries, even as virtually every study concludes that costs have been paid by U.S. firms and consumers. At one point, he seemed to take the long view that history would ultimately vindicate him, even if the Supreme Court would not. As time goes by, I believe the tariffs paid by foreign countries will, like in the past, substantially replace the modern-day system of income tax, taking a great burden off the people that I love, he said. Trump claims election cheating. The president also used the speech to reprise his attack on the integrity of U.S. elections. Cheating is rampant in our elections, Trump said. Trump has made such claims for years, focused on his 2020 election loss, claims rejected by dozens of courts and his own attorney general at the time. Trump is calling on Congress to pass a bill requiring voters to show a photo ID before casting ballots. But he also recently vowed to enact an executive order to address the issue, although the White House has not clarified what it might entail. No mention of Minneapolis. Sometimes what's not said is as notable as what is. Trump has highlighted immigration since the very first speech in which he announced his 2016 presidential campaign. And on Tuesday night, he revived much of the same language he's used throughout the past decade, blasting criminal aliens and warning of drug lords, murderers all over our country. What he didn't mention? The most aggressive immigration enforcement tactics that threatened to bring the U.S. to the brink earlier this year. He didn't mention the deaths of two U.S. citizens in Minneapolis last month at the hands of federal agents. Indeed, it was Representative Rashida Tlaib, Democrat Michigan, who shouted that Alex wasn't a criminal, referring to Alex Pretty, one of the U.S. citizens killed in Minneapolis. During her Democratic rebuttal, Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger said law enforcement must work to build trust in communities and said Trump, every minute spent sowing fear is a minute not investigating murders. Trump said nothing of his administration's shift in tactics, including a drawdown of agents in the Twin Cities, and he made no acknowledgement of the broad concerns in the U.S. about Trump's approach on immigration, as demonstrated by the 60% of U.S. adults who disapproved of his handling of the issue in February, according to AP NORC polling. Drumbeat for war gets louder. Trump has already built up the largest U.S. military presence in the Middle East in decades, and in his speech, he outlined a rationale for using those forces to launch a major military strike against Iran. The president said that Iran and its proxies have spread nothing but terrorism, death, and hate, adding that its leaders killed at least 32,000 protesters in recent weeks, which is at the further end of estimates over the death toll. The U.S.-based human rights activist news agency has so far counted more than 7,000 dead and believes the death toll is far higher. Iran's government offered its only death toll on January 21st, saying 3,117 people were killed. Trump also warned that the nation has developed missiles that can threaten Europe and is working on missiles that will soon reach the U.S. My preference is to solve this problem through diplomacy. But one thing is certain, I will never allow the world's number one sponsor of terror, which they are, by far, to have a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen. Cops. Man had sex abuse images by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police said Michael J. Black tried to spin them a tale about checking out child sexual abuse images online so that he could use that knowledge to protect children from predators. But the state police officers who raided Black's Decatur home February 20th weren't buying his story. One of many, they said, he told them in an effort to escape trouble. A sworn affidavit accuses the 46-year-old defendant of possessing some 275 computer images and videos showing the graphic rape and sexual abuse of girls 10 and under. Police, who swept through Black's home seizing various electronic devices, said he first tried to mislead officers by claiming he wasn't responsible for the pornography. He tried to explain that there were other people named Michael Black and that law enforcement may have confused him with someone else, said Special Agent Jordan Adams, who signed the affidavit. Then Black said he possessed some videos with underage children, but deleted them when he realized the nature of the files. When confronted with contradictory evidence, Black finally admitted that he downloaded child pornography content approximately 50 times. Jordan said Black also admitted using the pornographic images for the purposes of sexual arousal. But later, and speaking from the Macon County Jail after his arrest, he came up with a revised story that described him scouting out pornography online so he could help save others. Black minimized his behavior by stating that part of the reason he was searching for child pornography was to find out who out there would actually do that, so he could protect children from predators, Jordan added. The defendant was arraigned Monday in Macon County Circuit Court on 14 counts of possessing and disseminating images of child sexual abuse. Judge Lindsay Shelton denied him pretrial release because she said he posed too great a danger to the community if allowed out of custody. State police said they started investigating Black's internet activities after a tip-off back in December of 2024. They had conducted surveillance on his home and raided it after obtaining a search warrant. Black is due back in court for a preliminary hearing March 11th when he will enter formal pleas to the charges against him. Showcase to Spotlight High School Artists by Scott Perry, Decatur. The artistic talents of Eisenhower High School students will be on display Thursday, February 26th at its Black History Month Art Exhibition. The event, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the high school, will celebrate student creativity, culture, and artistic expression while honoring the legacy and contributions of Black artists and leaders. It will include a poetry performance by nationally recognized poet and writer Aubrey Barnes of Rock Island and a set by DJ Antonio Burton, aka Tony Picasso. Some of the student artwork will be available for purchase. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 26th, 2026. Please stay tuned.